Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome back to our weekly shir on the Parsha, weekly Torah shir, on Chassidus, the Shem Yishmuel. So, as always, the Shem Yishmuel's work, what he does is he'll take an idea that we kind of read in passing and go a little bit deeper into it, give a little bit of a perspective. And he, what's amazing about it, A, is that point that each and every week he's able to do that, but also also the fact that he ties in certain themes each week, each topic, very often talking about Shabbos and the importance of Shabbos from a both halachic and a spiritual level, but also taking classic ideas of machshava, of Jewish thought, and bringing them to life through the Parsha. So if you open up to, if you have a Chumash with you, if you open up just to page 366, 367, which is the very beginning. So so it starts off again as we left off the Jewish people exodus. It's not really a verb, but they went free last week. And now they're on their way out of Egypt, as they just left at the end of last week's Parsha, and now they're on their way out. Again, they're going to be traveling for how many days?
7 days.
7 days, right? 7 days. On the seventh day, they're going to come to the sea, which is why on Shavii Shel Pesach, on the seventh day of Pesach, that is when we meet Az Yashir, because that's when we know that they cross the sea. In fact, there are those who have a custom, I think I mentioned it last year, that the Naomi's family has this custom. I actually never heard of it before them, that on the seventh day, they actually find some sort of body of water with a path through it, and they'll walk through the path as a recreation of Kriyas Yamsuf. If you don't have a water source, so what they'll do is Naomi's family, they'll take two cups of water, put one on each side, and they'll walk through it. That idea. Anyway, so the Jewish people leave. Vayhi b'shalach paro es ha'am v'lo nacham elokim derech eretz plishin ki karovu. It happened when Paro sent out the people that God did not lead them by way of land of the Plishtim, because it was near, which is an interesting thing. For God said, perhaps people will reconsider when they see war and they will return to Egypt. But God says, whatever, I just took them out. If I take them the short route to Israel, again, you have to remember, the Jewish people, is there a map in this thing? I know the new ones we said have maps, right? I don't know if there's a map in this. New ones have maps. But if you were to look at a map of, if you were looking at a map of Israel and Egypt and again, the ways that they would go, right, does anyone have a map? Didn't the new ones have maps in the back, something like that? Anyway, so the bottom line is they took a very, I get this word wrong every time, circuitous route. In fact, if you look, let me see if I can find one.
If it is worthwhile to get a better understanding. I have more grip on this on fire island. This and the eight time. I get three of those. You got more money than I do. No, I have my father's. You mean on this?
Yeah.
I had one. I bought one from my father 12 years ago. Somehow I got one.
Okay. It's okay. We'll use our imagination. So if one is looking at the map, so you'll see that the Yam Suf is the way that they get to the Yam Suf is that they actually go in a the Yam Suf is not, you know, we imagine it as them crossing the sea or getting to the Plishtim. They get to
one of those two areas by the Sinai, so it's on the big part of the sea.
Right. So the truth is, so again, you have the sea. Israel, let's put it in this context. Israel is northeast of Egypt, correct? So if you go from the south, it's a pretty short journey, right? You can just go up. And you'll hit Israel. You know, what took 40? No, it wasn't going to be 40 years anyway. And obviously they had to go to the desert. It was, at this point, it wasn't supposed to take 40 years. And they were supposed to go, let's see. Perfect. There we go. Okay. So, which one's the opposite thing? It's hard to read. Okay, good. So, that'd be tough. Okay, so anyway, anyone wants to come close? Oh, same map. There we go, perfect. So if you see over here, the Jewish people are here. What?
TV.
Chock full of us. So the Jewish people are here, all, like over here in Goshen. And to go up to Israel, they just need to go kind of like, whoop, and just go kind of up this way. Right, when they what they the way they end up traveling, especially through the desert, so they are by Goshen is where the Jews were. We'll get on where they came from, but again, here's Egypt, here's Goshen, here's the Nile, here's Memphis. Anyway, just happens to be on this map over here, Heliopolis. So anyway, so all, if you wanted to go the most direct route to Israel, you would just kind of travel along the Mediterranean Sea, right, and you go up the south into the land of Israel. Right, that'd be great. Now, if you notice, the way they do go is they end up going all this very circuitous route. And then, now again, part of that has to do with the fact that they end up spending 40 years there. And therefore, they kind of had more. But they would have taken a more. But either way, Hashem says, don't take the most direct route. And when they get to the Yam Suf,
go on the east side of the river.
Right, this is the Reed Sea. The way they do it is we would imagine them crossing over the sea into the Negev area over here, into the Sinai Peninsula. But they don't. They actually, Chazal teaches, they actually went in a semicircle. They kind of started back where they ended where they started. The whole purpose was to avoid the Egyptians and to destroy the Egyptians, but they didn't actually, it wasn't like a shortcut through the sea. It was a semicircle that ended up bringing them back to almost where they started. But bottom line is, so why didn't God take them the short route? The land of the Plishtim. So who are the Plishtim? So if anyone goes to Lunch and Learn, you know, the Plishtim were a seafaring people. And they actually they were nomadic, but they kind of they were originally from like the Tyre area, and they dwelled on the southwest area of Israel, which we now call Gaza. You know, that area of the Gaza Strip and area that was the Plishtim. In fact, just a little bit of important history to know. The reason why where does the term Palestinian come from? Palestinians, the Palestinians, comes from Philistine. Now, why do the Palestinians call themselves Palestinians? Because they want to say, oh, we are the Philistines. We're the descendants of the Philistines who were in the land to begin with. Now, the Philistines, we know from biblical times, were not native to the land of Israel. They were, like we said, from the land of Tyre in that area. They were a seafaring people that ended up settling on the coast of Israel, on the coast of, on that, you know, on the Mediterranean Sea, on that coast. Now, the Romans, as a insult to us, instead of calling it Judea, when the Romans decided they wanted to totally wipe out our culture, they changed the name Judea to the name of Palestine as an insult to us. And that's why, again, even before 1948, the original Palestinians were Jews. They were the Jews who lived in the land of Palestine, which was the name given. Everyone who lives there was in the land of Palestine. That's what I'm saying. But it wasn't a culture, you know, an Arab, a subculture of the Arabs. There was no state. There was no country. And they certainly weren't the original Palestinians. And actually claiming to be the original Palestinians, the original Philistines, is actually if you know the history, it does worse, because they were not native to the land. They came after Abraham was there. And anyway, just an interesting history. Now, why did they...
other countries in the early 20th century.
Okay, you're talking about the original Arabs. Yeah, the Arabs now. Yeah, granted. But anyway, so why didn't they go through the land of the Plishtim? So the Torah says, because Hashem was worried they were going to see war and turn back. What? Why would that happen? So Soloveitchik here famously explains that the idea is that the Jews had a slave mentality. They had been slaves for the last 200 years, and therefore they were a very passive people. Again, imagine, and we do see it time and time again, when they complain about something, their first reaction is, oh, things were better in Egypt. It's like almost like Stockholm syndrome, you know, a little less, you know, diagnosed in a sense. But again, the idea was like, oh, let's go back, let's run back to our masters, because there at least we were safe. Now, again, they certainly weren't safe. They were being killed, they were being annihilated, and they were being crushed physically. But again, they had this slave mentality. So God took them the long route in order to have the time to recognize that they are no longer slaves. They are now free to serve Hashem.
Wasn't that because they wanted a new generation that didn't remember Egypt? That's why 40 years?
40 years is going to be a punishment that doesn't happen for another 2 years. Right now, the whole thing was supposed to take 11 days. 3-hour tour, right? It was supposed to be an 11-day journey. It was supposed to be an 11-day journey to Har Sinai. And then quick trip to Israel. And then we were going to be in Sinai Desert. You go up north and we're going to be there. It's going to be a quick 11-day thing, right? But unfortunately, yeah, well, that's the distance that it is to walk from Egypt to through the route they were going. It was supposed to be 11 days, but we're going to see that during the time. If you do the math and the distances later, but anyway, so okay.
When Yosef brothers went to buy.
Right, it didn't take them 40 years to go from Canaan to Egypt, right? It was a quick trip, and they were going with food, so obviously the food wasn't spoiling, right? They go back and forth. It was a trip, don't get me wrong. We were 2 weeks, but certainly not supposed to be 40 years. 11 days with 3 million people, right? With anyway. Sorry, 2 million people, right? Okay. As soon as you read the kit, right? There's the whole thing, right? Fine. So anyway, the bottom line is the Pasuk says that God took them out the long route, so they would not go back. Okay, fine. Of a Yosef Elokim as Amder Amidbar Yam Supa Hamashum Elubin Yisrael Mitzrayim. Where's the pasuk I'm looking for? 1 second. Okay, so now we keep going. The Jewish people are going out. They're following the pillar of cloud. Very, very exciting. And then, section. Okay, so now if you turn to page 368, so now Paro changes his mind. Okay, so Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. So now Hashem speaks to Moshe, saying, "Daber el bnei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel. Ve'yashuvu ve'yachanu lifnei piachiros bein migdol ve'in hayam lifnei bal tzifon nichachos achanu alayam. So speak to the children of Israel and let them turn back and encamp before piachirot between migdol and the sea." Before Baal Tzifon, you shall encamp opposite it by the sea. Paro will say to the children of Israel, they are imprisoned in the land. The wilderness has locked them in. I shall strengthen the heart of Paro and you will pursue them. And I will be glorified through Paro and his entire army. Egypt will know that I am Hashem. And so they did. So Paro changes his mind. Hashem causes Paro to change his mind, however you want to understand that. But what the Shem Yishmael picks up on, again, in the scheme of the story, very small point. But again, as we all know, that what's the most important rule of real estate? Location, location, location. That again, you can't make more land, right? You can't make more psukim. Every word in the Torah, every detail in the Torah has a meaning, has an understanding, and there are multiple levels of understanding. We call it pardes, pshat, remez, drash, and sod. Meaning those are four levels of understanding. There's the simple understanding. There's the metaphorical understanding. There's the more esoteric understanding, and then there's the understanding that you have to really be like a Kabbalist on a real high level to really understand. So there are multiple levels. It's a multi-tiered idea of the Torah. So what does the Shem Yishmael pick up on now? He picks up on this pasuk that says again, "Daber al Israel ve'yashuvu ve'yachanu lifnei piachiros." So return. So go back. Or ve'yashuvu really means like to return, like teshuva, like shuv, go back and turn back to piachiros. So what's the problem here? Go back to Piachiros. So let's say you're going on a trip. Okay, so I am driving from here to San Diego. Drive from here to San Diego. Okay, so I'm gonna go southwest, right? That's how I get there. And I'll probably stop by some major cities on my way. I'll probably at a certain point I'll hit Phoenix, Arizona when I get on the 8. I wait 8 west, then I end up going towards the coast, okay? So I'm going, so now I'm on my way back, so I'll say, okay, I'll go back to Phoenix. Now, what will I not say? I won't say I'll go back to a place that I didn't go on my way, right? I'm not going to say, oh, I'm going to go back to Montreal, right? Because I didn't go through Montreal. I can say, I'm going to go to Montreal. But when Hashem says, Vayashuvu El Piachiros, that implies that they're going to go back to this place called Pi HaChiros. Now, I don't know exactly on the map here where Pi HaChiros is. I don't see it on here. But I can tell you that the Torah never does tell us that they stopped in Pi HaChiros on their way towards the Yam Suf, towards the sea. So the question that Shem Yishmael comes up with, he says as follows. He says, V'yesh lahavid, we need to understand. Halo kvar nemar lo betchila shlichus o kod maschal tamakos. Nope, that's the wrong one. This one. Daber al bnei Yisrael. Okay, yesh ledakdik b'milas v'yashuvu. We're going to focus on the word and return to, right? She talking rak liisha shavel makom asher hayah sham barishona v'lo matzinu shayisham Yisrael barishona. Right, the word only applies if you're going back to revisit a place that you were before, right? teshuvah. You're going back to the stage, to the level of closeness that you were with God before. At a certain point, whether it was before a person sinned or it was before a person, whatever it was, that is the idea of teshuvah, to return back to God. The makavana el eretz Mitzrayim. And if you want to say the kavana in general was to the land of Egypt, halo lo shavu el Mitzrayim. They didn't go back to Mitzrayim proper. They didn't go back to Egypt proper. Rather, they were staying by the sea. They didn't actually go back to the former land of Mitzrayim. V'chein yadua b'mapas ha'aretz, which is like, again, you look at the map, right? V'im tirtza lomar, shezem mechlal malchus Mitzrayim. So if you want to tell me that it's talking about the kingdom of Egypt, again, this wasn't part of the cities in Egypt, but it was part of the broader kingdom of Egypt, that also doesn't work. Because there were other places that they did go back to. The Torah doesn't say return to. So again, consistency is a big thing. Why is it only, does it only say return to this place if they were never there? And if it's talking about Mitzrayim in general, the whole Egypt, well, there are other places on the outskirts of the Egyptian cities that are formerly part of the Egyptian kingdom, but it doesn't say they return to those places. How do we understand this? So says the Shem Yishmuel, an amazing idea. We're not going to go through the whole piece. We're going to see some of it and try to extrapolate the idea and hopefully apply it to our lives. Venira, dehine yitzias mitzrayim haya kol inyana lala min atem. Right? He says the entire concept, and this is a very big idea when it comes to Jewish thought, the entire experience of yitzias mitzrayim was above nature. Right, Hashem created nature. Right, you know, it's a fun thing we call Mother Nature. It's not such a thing as Mother Nature as its own entity. Hashem created nature. Hashem created the laws of nature. Hashem created gravity. Hashem created all forms of physics as the way through which He wanted the world to run. Meaning, one can learn appropriately. In fact, Rabbi Tesson mentioned this, that the Svardim throughout the generations were always a little bit better at this than Ashkenazim. Of recognizing, of seeing God through the prism of the sciences. Again, a lot of it could have had to do also just in terms of the relationships between their neighbors and other types of opportunities. Again, different times of history, there were obviously different challenges for both groups. But the bottom line is, we have the ability to look into nature and see God, because one is not looking at, God doesn't hide behind nature. God is nature. Nature is God. Nature is the rules, mathematics, physics, biology. These are all the rules through which God created the world or manifests in the world, that there's an order, there's a Seder. In fact, there's a halacha that one is not supposed to daven for a miracle. You're not supposed to daven for a miracle. What's the example given in the, now again, if someone's in a great need, if something is possible through the Derech HaTeva, through nature, so then you're allowed to daven for it. Right? The example given in the Mishnah is if a person is, let's say, driving home, and Rahman al-Islam, they hear, God forbid, they hear on the radio, there's a fire in their town. Okay? And then as they're getting closer, it's a fire on their block, and the house is consumed in flames. Again, God forbid. So a person is not allowed, should not daven, Hashem, please don't let it be my house. Hashem, please don't let it be my house. Why not? Because the house is already consumed. Either it is or it's not. Meaning, to daven for something like that, you're asking God to pull a Superman and fly backwards around the world, right? And reverse time, right? That's beyond nature. We don't ask God to go beyond nature, right? We're not supposed to rely on miracles.
Again, what about a Mishra Beirut? Somebody who's terminally ill.
So doctors have been wrong before. There have been many, many cases within nature where a doctor will say something is going to be a certain way. And we ask Hashem for rachamim, for mercy, and we ask Hashem within nature to heal this person. There have been people that have come back from the brink of death. Again, a story that I always tell, very timely. As Amir Tz Hashem, this Sunday, I'll be heading to the 8-time Shasathon, a major event that supports couples struggling with infertility. Remember, a number of years ago, there was a speaker. They always have a speaker from one of the 8-time couples. And this guy was speaking about how he remembers the day, the moment, the second, when the doctors told him and his wife that it was physically, medically, biologically impossible for him and his wife to have children. And they should consider other options, adoption, whatever it is. And as he's telling his story, the whole room is like baited for like horrible, your heart is breaking for this guy, 10 years. And then they're married for 10 years living with this news. And then all of a sudden, somebody walks up onto stage with two babies and says, the jury is in. you know, these are the two impossible babies with the help of a time and their services. And again, whether it's IVF and all these different things, these, you know, the medically impossible, I saw with my own two eyes, two babies that were medically impossible to exist. That the doc, so again, doctors are just doctors. They do their best to respect. But that being said, we've seen things. And again, you can call it a miracle because it's unexpected, but it's not beyond nature. Right, it's not beyond nature, and therefore we can daven for such things. We can daven for such things. There are always second opinions and the like, but one shouldn't daven for something that, you know. Again, one shouldn't. You know, again, with all due respect, I know it's a. One shouldn't daven. The Gemara says that one shouldn't daven for the gender of a baby. Now, again, this is an arguable point, but after 40 days, one shouldn't daven for the gender of a baby anymore. Because again, either now we'll say, well, 40 days is already too late from the second of conception already is determined. Okay. Well, okay. Chazal understand what does it mean 40 days? The significance of the number 40, is it meant to take literally? Is it the science of the time? The bottom line is we can all agree is that once we can assume that the gender has already been determined, thank God for us, with our science today, we know that's at the moment of conception. But in Chazal, they understood that it was 40 days after conception. That was when the deal was sealed in terms of the gender. One shouldn't daven for it to be a boy or a girl, because either it's one or the other already. Like, that's what it is, right? And the Gemara asks, what about the fact that Leah was pregnant with a seventh son, and she knew that there were only going to be 12 tribes. So what did she do? And that meant that her sister Rachel was only going to have one son, even less than the maidservants. So she davened that Rachel, that the child in her womb, who was supposed to be Yosef, turned into a girl, into Dina. So Gemara says, what about that? By the way, very interesting point. And actually, the Chazal already talk about that. If you notice that again, not to get putting modern day, you know, whatever aside. But again, Chazal do point out that Yosef had certain feminine qualities, and Dina, who was the replacement, as were had certain masculine qualities. That Dina was a yatsanish. She would go out. She went to conquer, as it were. She had a more masculine type of idea. And Yosef was very into his beauty and very into his looks and the like, which was a more feminine idea. So some say that was the result of the swapping of Yosef and Dina. But bottom line, and so Gemara asks, Dina did it. So you know what the Gemara says? You can't bring a story from the Avos. Sorry, the Avos were on a little bit of a different level than the rest of us. Their tefillos, they had the ability to kind of talk to God about those kind of things. But bottom line is, we don't daven for miracles. So nature is the way. And so the one who davens for a miracle, even if God gives you the miracle. So Gemara says that, you know, you might be taking away from some of your sechuyos, and you're causing God to change the natural order through which he made. Now, if you look at the various Rishonim, the various sources throughout the Torah, throughout Chazal and the rabbis, So there are different opinions as to how far we take that. The Rambam, Maimonides, for example, is known to be much more of a rationalist type of approach. And he'll go as far as to say that even Yetzias Mitzrayim, even Kriyas Yamsuf, this week's parsha, the splitting of the sea, that it wasn't a miracle. Why? Because God never veers from the natural order. So how do you explain it? He says that God programmed into, from the first second of creation, God that at that moment the sea was going to split. So that was part of nature. Again, different ways how you want to. So again, so he explains again, with the exception of the Makos, which was a clear veering of nature for a purpose. The plagues were a clear veering, and you could say the same thing about the splitting of the sea. But the Rambam in many places makes the case for he's much more of a rationalist type of approach to the miracles in the Torah. Again, it comes up when it comes to so that wasn't a miracle. That again, that wasn't a break of nature, as it were. That was God intervening in human affairs. That's not that's not exactly the same as breaking the rules of nature. You know, breaking gravity would be another story. You know, or yeah, for example, we hear all about the sorcerers of Egypt, right, and how they would perform magic. So the Ramban famously talks about how there was a concept. Okay, we're not familiar with it, but this dark magic idea where one can manipulate certain energies that exist in the world, that Hashem created in the world, to perform magic. The Rambam says, no. The Rambam says it was all sleight of hand. He says it was all, you know, trickery. It was all avodah zarah, idol worship. It wasn't real magic. And this is a consistent machlokes between them in many stories in the Torah. But bottom line is, God acts through nature. He likes nature. Nature is the rule of the land, right, as it were. But Yetzias Mitzrayim, as we pointed out, was completely above nature, right? Was completely beyond nature. All of the plagues, and I would say even Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, but although maybe not. Again, this is where the Rambam kind of says maybe guess, but certainly all the plagues were certainly beyond nature. You can't, you know, I think I've mentioned in the past on some History Channel special on the plagues and how they try to explain how really all of them were just natural phenomenon that just worked out at that moment, whatever it was. Okay.
The sea really was algae.
Something like that. Okay, if you try hard enough and you want to close your eyes long enough, then okay, you can see or not see whatever you want to see or not see. But bottom line is, it was a complete break of nature. That was Kriyas Yam. That was the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it continues the Shem Yishmuel. So he gives another example. Again, this one I didn't know until learning this piece. He says that, you know, we view, you know, all of the Jews, comes time for the Geula, for the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So everyone was kind of just like ready in a big parking lot by the buses. And then everyone on the bus, we're going, right? Think about it. There were, how many people we just said, right? 3 million people, right? That were presumably not all in one little parking lot. They were presumably spread throughout different areas of Egypt. Again, most of them were in the area of Goshen, but even that's a big area. And then all of a sudden they were able to kind of gather for leaving Egypt. They were all to kind of gather quickly. It's like saying, you know, again, you have all of the Jewish communities, all of a sudden we're all at JFK together and go to Israel. Okay, it takes time to do that. How did that all happen so quickly? Okay, because we were working in a situation that was beyond time, that was beyond space, that was beyond nature. So again, that's no more of a question than how did hail with fire and ice come down from the sky, right? Once we're assuming that, then we can assume that too. Yes. Again, that's not necessarily changing nature as much as changing the will of certain creations. Meaning, what natural law was broken with that? No, I'm saying we have physics, mathematics. What natural law? Again, free will isn't a natural law.
Well, the instinct of all those animals.
Instinct isn't a natural law. Again, I'm talking about natural laws. I'm talking about nature. Again, you can say that Hashem intervenes in the nature of people. So, you know. Okay, so that was God's revelation of himself. That God is allowed to break nature. God is allowed to do it. Under certain circumstances, he will. When God wanted to reveal himself to Moses, so yeah, he did it through a break of nature, because again, that was the way to get Moshe's attention, to say, hey, by the way, you have to recognize that I am God, right? God didn't want Moshe to just say, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, God wanted Moshe to know, like, oh, this is God, right? This is Hashem. I am he. Who is he? The one who is called I am, right? So all of this, so yeah, that was a break in nature, because yeah, that, I mean, God speaking in a sense is a break of nature, as it were. Again, not necessarily natural law, but again, when I say a break of nature, I mean like, you know, gravity ceasing, you know, the sun, again, understanding Yoshua, when certain miracles do happen in Tanakh where nature is suspended, right? When Yoshua asks for the sun to stay still during the battle, you know, in Givon, so or in Ayalon, so yeah, that was a break of nature as well. God does it on occasion. We're just not supposed to really ask for it. It can't happen. So anyways, but the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim was a total break of nature. So as it says, the people were all gathered together quickly. Hashem says, I'll take you on the wings of eagles. But the idea wasn't that God was, by redeeming the people, by redeeming them, by freeing them, by taking them out. It wasn't the idea that nature was supposed to be suspended from now on, right? Ki gam ha-teva hu bria me'es Hashem, v'lo tohu bra, ve'evit b'toru bara az ha'olam, right? That nature itself is an ideal, right? It's not like we're bound. Exile is not an ideal, right? We're not supposed to be in this state of affairs right now. Hey, we're not going to touch on last week's topic. We're going to leave that last week. But anyway, Galus is not an ideal. We're not supposed to be in exile right now. We're supposed to have already been redeemed. Whatever that means, we're supposed to, if we did our part. So the bottom line is nature is an ideal, right? Nature isn't just like a temporary thing. While we're in exile, we're going to have nature. Hashem looked at the Torah, as whatever this means. Again, this is a lofty idea, but that Hashem looked at the Torah and created the world. So when Hashem created nature, that was included. Yeah. So v'lo yitachin shetihe hakavana sheyateva el tachlas hakavana shegam hateva yiskadesh ve'akol kodesh hilulim l'Hashem. Rather, what's the intention? What's the fate, the destiny of nature? The destiny of nature is that our interactions with nature is supposed to bring about a kiddush shem shamayim. It's supposed to bring a sanctification of God's name. Meaning we are supposed to be able to sanctify God's name through nature. And again, that means sometimes looking at nature and seeing God, right? Looking at the beauty. Again, I was in San Diego last week. And again, honestly, you look out at the Pacific Ocean and it's impossible not to be in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the world that he created. Just the vast, endless ocean. It's just, you look at it and you see the face of God. I mean, it's yeah, but that's the Atlantic Ocean. Not the same. Atlantic Ocean is, I'm sorry. Listen, I grew up in New York on the South Shore, you know, right near Long Beach, right near Atlantic Beach. I know the Atlantic is great. It's great. I love flying over to go to Israel, but it's no Pacific Ocean. The Pacific Ocean, it's called the Yam HaGadol, right? You make a bracha when you see the Pacific Ocean. That's a
the gematria of Hateva is the same as Elohim.
Yes, exactly. We're going to get to that. Very good. Len, on the ball. Very good. We're going to get to that. So again, but there are certain sights you see and you just look at it and like you are looking at the Ribono Shel Olam. Okay, you're looking at nature, but this couldn't have just been designed. This couldn't just have happened. So
you notice all the miracles that God wanted to bring himself into the world was with water, the flood, the water, but it was only Noah and his family that saw it. So it didn't really have an impact. That's why the world still needed a change. It needed a people to set an example, to be a blessing to Hashem, whatever. Therefore, water was also involved in that.
Right.
Can I ask a question?
Of course you can.
Could you say that God designed humans so that when we see the Pacific Ocean or we see a magnificent mountain, that it makes us think that it's magnificent? Like, why do we think it's magnificent? You know, I mean, I look at it, I go to Vail, Colorado, I say, this is magnificent. But why? Why do I think that that would be? Based on what you're telling me, God created everything. God created nature.
Right.
So didn't God also create the way I, as a human being, and human beings in general, are so impressed when they look at that?
Right.
Because God gave us knowledge. But is that knowledge?
I didn't say that's knowledge. I didn't say that's knowledge.
Anyway, I don't think it's knowledge.
Isn't that just the way we've been designed as human beings?
I think it's all, yeah. I mean, it's, I think that makes sense. Yeah, we're designed to be in awe of things that are great.
We're designed for that to put us in awe. Like, maybe if we hadn't been designed that way, we would say, oh, that's a big mountain or that's a big piece of
right, ground. No, I think it's human nature to be in awe of those things. The question is, what do we do with that awe?
So human nature is also God-given.
I think so. Yeah, God created us, right?
Don't you get the same awe feeling when you see the Manhattan skyline? What man, the knowledge we have?
No, I don't.
Natural resources.
It happens to be. I'll tell you. I'll be honest with you. Last night, I was driving to Manhattan. I did see the skyline. It was like kind of like sunset. It was beautiful. It happens to be. It's a little different. A little different. I'm not in awe. There's impressive, being impressed versus being in awe. Again, the Pacific Ocean for me is like, that's it. You look at it and it's like, and you can look at it from we did a couple different hikes on a couple different areas on the San Diego coast. Every different view is like, you're just in awe all over again. You know, it's an amazing thing. Anyway, behind Ukiva Gashmias that have a Moshech Ledvarm Hafachim Me'avodas Hashem Yisbarach, that when it comes to Gashmias, right, with Gashmias, Moshech Ledvarm Hafachim Me'avodas Hashem Yisbarach, that sometimes the physical side of the world can draw us in a sense, sometimes though, away from that sense of awe. When we get too engaged in the earthly, we kind of lose sight of the spiritual. Ukomo Shapiresh Bala Akeda, Bayifga Bamakum Shanazal Kulkmin Kosel Lefanov, the other Maboli Taritar, Lishbor as a Kosel Hazeh, Haome Lefanov Kechoma Batsur. It says that by Yaakov Avinu, when Yaakov prays, it says, Bayifga Bamakum, Paga. A pigua, God forbid, a havdil, is referred to as an attack, right? That a striking, al tivgabi, don't strike me. It wasn't mean that Yaakov was vayivga b'makom, that he struck at that place, that sometimes, and again, this gets back to what I was saying before, as we have that natural awe, but the question is, what do we do with it? Now, I can look at it and say, wow, that's beautiful, or I can look at it and say, wow, God created a beautiful world. Meaning you need to break through that veneer, you need to break through that facade of nature, to recognize that nature isn't just a natural force, but it is the natural force that was created as Hashem wanted the world to go. Again, I'll never forget. I always think of this. It's the funniest thing to me. is that I remember, I think it was Hurricane Sandy. And I remember, I don't remember which, it probably was, Cuomo, I think at the time, I don't remember which politician it was, but they were talking about the seawall, of Manhattan, and how, cause again, remember during Sandy, half of Manhattan, the lower half of Manhattan was totally flooded. And they said, we're going to build it. I remember this line. It was amazing. We're going to build it higher and stronger, that Mother Nature will never be able to strike it again. I was like, what hubris. Gaiva, I could is an amazing. Yeah, I'm like, this is his mother is gonna grow up. When if he wants it to rain, you build a higher wall. If he wants New York City to go underwater, he'll make it rain more. You know, like it's an amazing thing that sometimes we can blind ourselves. So we'll look at nature and we'll say, oh, that's my proof that. You know, but again, it's a veneer, it's a facade, and sometimes we need to be able to break down that wall. That was the Yaakov's Vayifka b'makom, right? We struck at that place and found God beneath. So he says, what's the idea? Again, the idea isn't that we break down nature and we ignore it, but again, we raise it up. We raise it. We have the ability, an amazing thing, to raise up the Pacific Ocean, to enhance it, to make it a more spiritual entity by looking at it and seeing the face of God through it, by being in awe of God through it and not being in awe of the ocean, right? We have the ability to raise the level of kedusha there. So shekol isha bali tar lo yom minios mitzara teva the adra ba teva yamzi lo kol atzorach lavo doso ki atavu kechomer vavodas Hashem isbarach ketsura. Ooh, very very famous idea, powerful idea in Jewish thought, and that is the idea of what's called chomer and tsura. This is discussed already by the Rishonim. The Maharal expands on it. Chomer means the form. It means just like the base, right? And tsura means the form, right? Every object in this world has base material, and then it's formed into something, right? Then it's formed into something. In fact, that's the many leaders of Jewish thought explain that's the idea of a man and a woman coming together in the union. That ish to isha, that man and wife. That the, what are the two letters? The two letters they have in common, ish and isha, are what?
Aleph and shin.
Right, Aleph and Shin. So both of them have Aleph and Shin, which is by the way H, right, fire. But the letters that they're different is Yud and Hey, which is the name of God. So if you take the name of God out of the marriage, what are you left with? H, right. So the idea of fire, right? The idea is that we bring God. That marriage is a spiritual entity as well. Right? That it's an expression of Avodas Hashem, of man and woman coming together. But if you look at those letters Yud and Hey, so what's Yud? Yud floats in the air, right? And hay is tucked into the ground, right? It's settled in the ground. It has two pegs. So many explain it. The idea that very often, again, I don't mean to be stereotypical, but men very often by nature are, in a sense, the ones who want to go out and conquer the world and have all these ideas and big ideas. And very often it's the wife, it's the Rebbetzin who keeps things a little bit more grounded. Now, again, obviously every couple is going to be different. Roles are going to be different. But by and large, you see that idea of, and therefore that's the idea that man represents the chomer, right? The base material, and the wife represents the tsura who forms it into its potential. And together they create a machine ultimately that is going to bring fruition to the world. So anyway, that's the idea of chomer and tsura. And that's the idea here too, that one could have that the gashmiya, right? The physical aspect of the world is the chomer, right? Chumrius, right? It means physicality. And our ability to sanctify that is the tsura, gives it its form. Again, we give the Pacific Ocean its form. Otherwise, it's just water. We give it its form by associating it, by elevating it to a sanctification of God's name. So again, it's getting late. So I wanna get to the end of the piece here, which again is a fascinating idea, but he says that was the reason what's going on here. That up to this point, the Jewish people were experiencing beyond Teva, beyond nature. And the truth is, it was a little bit superficial, right? Again, it was an unbelievable sight. But again, we always think about it, that the marriage, you know, when a young couple, I was at a Sheva Brachos last night. So Sheva Brachos is, you have the wedding, and then it's like a big party every night of the week. And it's like, you know, then finally, you know, the first night that's very, very striking to the couple, to the new couple, is the first night after Sheva Brachos. You know why? Because everyone's gone. There's no more music. There's no more partying. Now it's like real life starts, right? Unless you're being supported by the parents, then real life doesn't start for a little bit. But real life starts. It's not a big party anymore. You have to realize that marriage has challenges. That marriage has, you know, you have to work things out. You have to develop together. You have to grow together, right? In a sense that while everything is all fun and games and party and light, so then yeah, it's fun, but that's not where the real marriage is formed yet. The real marriage is only formed once you get into the nitty gritty of it. Marriages grow stronger through the challenges and working out, you know, things through marriage, right? There's a famous story. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, one of the great, great leaders of the previous generation in Yerushalayim Yer Kodesh. So he said at the Levaya for his wife, he said at the Levaya of his wife, said that he had nothing to apologize for. There's a custom to apologize to the Nifter, you know, anything I might have done. He had nothing to apologize for. And the implication was that, you know, everything was always great. So one time he had a student come to him shortly after, and he asked the student how, you know, again, just got married. He said, you know, so how's the marriage going? He said, honestly, I'm a little bit nervous. You know, I listened to Rebbe's, his eulogy for his wife, and honestly, we fight sometimes, and it makes me nervous that, like, you know, maybe we're not like the same marriage that you have. He says, whoa. I didn't say we never disagreed. I didn't say we never fought. I just said we always worked everything out, that now at the end that we got stronger through every experience that we had, that I have nothing left to apologize for because we didn't leave anything on the table, right? We dealt with everything as it came together. And I always tell this to new chassanim, to assume that you're going to go into marriage and not have any disagreements or arguments or what, so then you're in la la land. You're not really married then. I don't know what you're doing. Maybe you're not living in the same house. I don't know where you are, right? But that's part of life. That's part of marriage. That's where things get stronger. And same too, that when Klal Yisrael was in this Yetzias Mitzrayim type of mentality, that was the honeymoon period, right? That was all fine and dandy, but they needed to return in order to really become the nation they were supposed to be. They needed to return Vayashuvu. Go back a couple steps. We got to go back to nature first. It wasn't about going back to that location, Piachiros. That was just the location where it was going to happen. But Lashuv, go back to a time when you guys work within nature. And that's going to be the real test, because now that you go within nature, now that you know that you're no longer, protect, again, obviously throughout the desert, they were protected by the cloud of glory. Again, obviously different levels to this idea, the different levels of God's manifestation and God's involvement. But bottom line is now, for the first time in their experience, they're between a rock and a hard place, the sea on one side and the Egyptians on the other. And they know there's not going to be any fiery, hail coming down. Now, again, I know, I understand there is the cloud of glory and there's the fire that is coming there. But from their perspective, they don't know how God's going to act. There's no more expectation of the miracle. And that's why it actually says, this I heard from Rabbi Tzvi Ram discussing this piece, that in the movies, you know, you watch the Ten Commandments or you watch the Prince of Egypt or whatever these movies they come out with. Again, the latest one with Christian, I didn't really see, but I'm sure it's the same thing. When Moses goes and what happens? So you see the whole sea splits and you see from one side to the other. It's not how it happened, right? The people would walk, Nachshon ben Aminadab went into his neck, and then the sea started splitting. And every step they took, the sea split a little bit more. It wasn't like a free-for-all. We see the path. They had to have that faith within nature, within the natural order, that emunah, that bitachon, that faith that God was going to take them the rest of the way. And then God did perform miracles, because as we started with, God does sometimes perform miracles for us. We can't ask for them. We can't expect them. But at the same time, that's what it means, vayashuvu. And that's our avoda here. Our avoda in life is to recognize that, yes, of course, Hashem is HaKol Yachol. Hashem could do anything. And in fact, as the famous Ramban on Parshas Bo explains, that really everything in our lives is a miracle, right? And I repeat this a lot because it's so important, that every breath we take, every time we blink without thinking about it, and it refreshes your eyes, that's a miracle that you didn't have to think about that. That when you go to sleep, your heart continues to beat, you continue to breathe, your body continues to function, you're able to use the bathroom normally. These are all miracles, right? God does perform miracles for us every day. It's just built into nature. So sometimes we need to appreciate it. We need to take a step. And that's this idea of bridging the natural and the supernatural, recognizing that it's all one function, all one idea. But it requires us to go back to Piachiros, to go back to that, to always remind ourselves of that idea. And that's why the Jewish people here had to return to that before the Kriyas Yamsuf. before the splitting of the sea, because they weren't going to be zochet. They weren't going to merit the splitting of the sea if they didn't reach that point, if they weren't able to get there on their own. And that's why the splitting of the sea, many point out, is maybe even like a different miracle, separate than Yetzias Mitzrayim.
So they walked around for a week, you're saying,
and then they came back. So they walked, well, again, I don't have a map here, but they walked from the area of Goshen to the sea. It took them 7 days to get there. Yeah, to get there.
But you said they returned.
No. Again, they walked there, and then in the sea, it went in like a rainbow. It went in like a crescent. So they ended up on the same side of the sea, but they walked 7 days from Goshen to the sea. And then once they got to the sea, the Egyptians were behind them. So God said, go in the sea. And they ended up doing a semicircle, you know, and the Egyptians got swallowed up by the sea. So they didn't have to worry about them coming out to find them. But it brought them back up. And then they ended up continuing the journey up to the land of Israel, or to the Har Horeb, to Mount Sinai.
But actually, we were free. Yom Suf split for God's sake, not for our sake, because we were created as a people. A nation was taken out of a nation, which was a miracle. So this nation should be an Or HaGoyim, because the world was...
It's taking us a little far. It's taking us a little far afield. So we'll leave it at that. But again, the idea here, again, the very, very important idea that we have to apply to our lives, is to recognize that we experience miracles every single day. And these miracles are there for us. They're within nature. They're built within nature. But our responsibility is to take that step back and to recognize those miracles and to elevate the world. We have the ability. It's a crazy concept that we, human beings, individuals, have the ability every single day to elevate the world in different ways, both through our mitzvot and being an Or LaGoyim, exactly the light among the nations, but unto the nations, but also even in our own thoughts, even in our just elevating of nature to ourselves, we have the ability to bring the world up. So we should be Zocha. Again, as we read the parshas of Gula, how could we not give a bracha of Gula, of redemption, of personal redemption, national redemption, world redemption, humankind redemption, everything we need, should be Zocha, but we should be able to do it through this lens, through the idea of seeing God in every step we take. Mirza Hashem. Shkoyach, everyone. And we should have a wonderful evening. Thank you.